Welcome to the Parent Coaching Podcast with Kiva Schuler. Raising children is such an important job and one of the most challenging. Listen in on real-life parent coaching sessions so you can learn practical strategies and techniques and recognize you're not alone in struggling with the sometimes painful difference between what you thought parenting would be and what it's actually like. Ready for your parenting breakthrough? Listen in and discover how to become the parent you're truly proud to be for your kids.
Sibling rivalry, kids bickering, fighting in the backseat, fighting over toys. These are some of the biggest triggers for parents, especially of young kids. It can send our nervous system into haywire. Traditional parenting would say that the path forward is to reduce or eliminate the behavior, right? Like, it's annoying us, they're driving us crazy, so therefore let's get them to stop doing that. But here's the thing, and I guess I'll preface this by saying that this is why it's really useful for parents to have at least a broad strokes understanding of normal childhood development, to understand what three-year-old normative behavior looks like, and that it can vary based on environment, children's neuronormative capacity or neurodiverse capacity, and other things that are going on. As with everything here at JAI, the work always starts in how we are responding to the conditions and environment that we are in so that we can provide a safe and calm and grounded teaching to our children of more appropriate ways of behaving. But what I can say as a mom myself is that when you're in those moments, it doesn't matter how much you know, we're going to react. And in no way does being a peaceful parent mean that you're going to be a perfect parent or that you're going to not ever lose your temper or snap at your kids or lose your patience. You are a human being. You get to be human. And so as you're going to hear in this coaching session, there is a path forward even when we have our not best parenting moments. In fact, it can be really useful for children to see that we mess up too, but that we take responsibility for it, repair the relationship with our child, and come back into connection, because that lets them know that they get to be a human being who makes mistakes too. You're going to love this coaching session with Alan, and definitely stick around for the conversation that we have afterwards, because there are some real mic drops from our amazing trainer, Alan Miller. She is such a gem. And if you're curious about the work that we do here as parent coaches at the JAI Institute for Parenting, we have a live masterclass coming up. It's called Turn Your Passion for Parenting into a Career That You Love. And you can find details for that on our homepage at www.jaiinstituteforparenting.com. Enjoy this week's session. I know you're going to get so much from it.
So I know a little bit of your background. And as we were preparing for this conversation, you mentioned that you just feel kind of stuck in the same place. It just keeps coming back again. So first, I'd love to hear a little bit about what that stuckness is or what that's around.
So my biggest thing that I feel like keeps coming up is about like when it's around like physical aggression between my children and how to handle that. I have a 3.5-year-old and a 21-month-old. And as you know, also a 2-week-old, but it's me. It's the two oldest ones where my 3.5-year-old has started really hitting and pushing and kicking his 21-month-old brother. And the 21-month-old has also started doing that back. And I find it hard to navigate the situation. Like, I feel like physical aggression is like a really big trigger for me. And I feel super inconsistent because like, I don't feel super confident in what I'm doing. And I'm sure that plays a role in them continuing to do these behaviors often, and then me getting super frustrated where I end up like yelling or getting to a spot where I don't like to be.
Okay. Yeah. All of that makes sense to me. So first I just want to check, I mean, based on their age, 3.5 and not quite 2, does your system kind of recognize Like, how does your system see these interactions? Does it seem like they just shouldn't be happening at all? Or does, on some level, does it make sense that they're showing these behaviors toward each other?
So it makes sense that they're showing these behaviors towards each other, because typically it's like when one of them is in the other one's space, or the other one is taking a toy, or the other one is messing up the fork, or whatever it is. So like, it makes sense. It's hard because like, I know where a 3-year-old should be with impulse control, but he's also like always been so much more advanced verbally, mentally. And so it's really hard for me to remember that the 3-year-old is 3 and not like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And I know that's part of the challenge as well. Like, I almost have more patience with the 21-month-old because like, I know, even though he's also very, like, he can say full sentences, like he's very advanced as well, but he's also not 2 yet. And he still looks like a baby.
Oh.
So it's like, it's harder for me to have that patience with my 3-year-old, even though I know that's where he should be, but he doesn't seem like he should be that based on how much he knows and how much he can communicate.
Yeah. So that actually, I'm glad I checked in on that, because it sounds like you have the awareness of the stages of development that they are in. And I heard you say that both of your boys are, and I happen to know that they are boys. I don't know if you clarified that, but anyway, both of your boys, you know, are cognitively advanced. They can verbally, you know, express themselves pretty well, especially for their age. And in these situations, when they start showing aggression and these behaviors coming out, would you say that's more of a reflection, or I'll say, I see that as a reflection of their emotional state. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if understanding and seeing their cognitive development at a higher plane, and then these behaviors coming from an emotional state, does that shift the perspective at all?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question exactly, but like, I guess it is hard because their emotional state and cognitive state aren't on the same level. So I guess it almost feels like it's harder to address the emotional state because of that.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. You captured what I said, even though it seemed like you didn't understand. No. Yeah. Every human, especially young children, especially under the age of 7, they have many layers of their development. They have their physical development. They have their brain development. They have their emotional and their social relationship development. And for any child, these pieces of development do not happen in sync. And you're sharing that with your specific children. You see where parts of their development are on like a high trajectory. And here's a different element of their developing person that is not at the same level as another portion. And so I imagine like one part of you is like, yeah, cool, I can talk to my kids. They're young, but I can actually have a conversation. I can really get into their experience. They can talk about what's happening. But gee whiz, this aggressive behavior, I mean, come on. And so there seems like a mismatch. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that, just naming that, it's not a mismatch, it's just, you know, who they are right now. But naming that difference in developmental processes, does that sink in a different way?
Yeah, it does. Trying, like, thinking about it in that way. I guess it's hard because like, even though like, I feel like I'm like aware of that difference, I guess in the moment I struggle to respond in a way that matches where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go deeper. There's like, great to just say, oh, well, that's different. But then what? So in some of those moments where your older son starts, you know, with the behaviors toward his younger brother, can you kind of paint the picture of your like gut reaction? Like, what's flying through your head? Or like, what are your first instinctive kind of reactions?
So it depends if it was the first time or like the fourth time, but in the first first time or two, I feel like I go in like, okay, this is happening. It's fine. Like, I'm pretty calm. I go over and I might say something like, well, sometimes I try to stop it before it actually happens. Like, I notice my 3-year-old getting like really upset. So I come over and I'll say, hey, I noticed that you're getting really frustrated that, your little brother is taking these toys or doing this. Let's try to figure this out together. And sometimes that works great. Or if I notice he's hit, I go over and I'll say, hey, you know, I noticed that you hit your little brother because it looked like you needed some space. And I kind of take him away and I try calming him down. And then we come back and I say, remember, because we've already talked about like if you need space, you can say space, please. Like go like this, say space, please. So he does that pretty well. But then if it's like the third or fourth time, I go in really like honestly thinking again, like this just happened again. Like we just talked about this. And so I'm going into the situation like, Mason, we just talked about this. Like, why are you doing this again? Like, you know you shouldn't. But so I guess it's just depending on when and also what time of day, because I'm definitely a little bit better in the morning than I am in the evening.
So, I mean, everything that you're sharing, I just want to give you a gold star parenting award, which is completely counter to like our whole entire approach. But I honestly hear you sharing that you even prepare ahead, like you don't wait till it's explosion to, step in and do your parenting. Like you're seeing it ahead of time. You're preemptive, you're supportive in the first time it's coming up. And there are days where it gets to that third or fourth or more times, and you're like, okay, no, just it's too much. Can't handle it. Like we already have been here. So now what? So now I'm going to ask like a different kind of question, because from what you've shared, like you don't need more strategies. Like you're doing like the quote unquote right things. You're doing what peaceful parenting is about. And there's still something inside you that kind of like reaches its limit. So I'm wondering, in those moments, like you said, where this just isn't how you want to respond, is there perhaps a little quieter voice that's not even verbalizing necessarily? But I'm wondering, does it mean something about you that you get to that point where you snap or you yell or you just don't show up anymore the way that you wish you could?
Well, I do start feeling like, honestly, part of me almost feels like a fraud because, like, I'm working through the, parent coach training stuff, and then I can't even keep this together for those times. So, like, part of me is like, did I learn anything? Am I even going to be a good coach? Am I going to be able to help others if I can't even do this myself? And adding a third kid, like thinking, can I even, if I can't handle two kids, how can I handle three kids? And so it's just kind of like, I don't know, I almost feel like I feel like I know what to do, but then when it comes to like actually doing it, like I just feel like I'm doing something, I don't know, I just don't feel like I'm a good role model. Like I feel like, I'm not sure. That's kind of what I feel like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, let me just kind of repeat back some of the words that I'm hearing and see if there's like kind of one like piece that's like underneath all of that. So I heard you say like I'm a fraud. Like I'm actually in learning and doing all of this stuff and getting ready to help other people do it too, and here I am. Like, oh my gosh, I have these two kids and I can't even like take care of them and work through this, and now I've got a third. Oh my gosh, like who am I? I wonder, like that voice of who am I? Like what am I doing here? Can you kind of share a little bit more about what that voice might be looking or sounding like?
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it almost makes me feel like, I don't know if this answers your question, but like kind of like a bad mom. Like I don't want to, like I'm just like thinking about how honestly, like me and my siblings are all in or have been in therapy and like thinking about just like the way my parents parented us and then not wanting my kids to do, you know, have to go to therapy because of me later on and thinking that they're just on the same trajectory, even though I know I'm parenting so differently than my parents did. But I'm still like, man, I'm like, I'm gonna mess them up. Like, I don't want them to hate me. My mom doesn't have a good relationship with most of her children, except for me. Like, I'm the only one. And it's almost because I feel like I've come to terms with understanding that she had been through a hard time. And so I feel like a lot more empathetic towards her, just and her situation, how hard she had it growing up. And in parenting, she had us, I'm a twin, and she had us at 17. And so that was a struggle and came from like abusive home, physical, and also like substance abuse and such. And so, like, I'm just like, not like that at all, but like thinking of where her relationships are with her four kids. I just don't want my kids to get there.
Can I make a guess about maybe where that message of like, I'm gonna mess them up might be coming from? It almost sounds like a fear voice and fear that's looking into the future and fear that's saying, based on your experience and the relationship you currently have, if you mess it up, in quotes, then your children's future is gonna be like what you experience now.
Yeah, kind of. That sounds pretty, well, not kind of. I think that sounds pretty accurate.
So in those, and I just want to offer naming that in those moments where you're in that space of like, come on, we've already talked about this again, really again. I see that that is kind of your edge of your window of tolerance for responding in the way you want to these behaviors. Like that repetition pushes you to your edge. And so when you're in that space at your edge, you're far from your center. And that's a very ripe place for this fear to come up and say, you're messing all this up. Who are you even? And that fear is looking into the future and seeing lots of stuff you don't want. Does that kind of match your experience in those like hardest moments?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So I'm wondering, just so that we can like work with the fear in a different way, because based on what you've learned and based on, you know, what we talk about through Jai, like our emotions come in for a reason. They want us to understand something. So I'm curious if, first, if you can personify this fear a little bit, like, does it stir up any physical sensations in your body or even like images or colors or anything else? If we could like honestly bring this fear to life, what might that look like or feel like or sound like?
I'm not sure if I can like visualize it, but I know when I get to that point, like I really feel it like in my chest, like my heart like races, like anytime I'm feeling like anxious or like it's mostly like my heart racing. And I can just feel like I can notice, I notice it, but I just don't act on it. But like I can tell like my breathing gets deeper, my heart starts racing, and I'm like, I know that I'm getting upset. And sometimes I'll sit there and try to breathe, and I'm like hearing them hit each other in the background, and I'm like, this isn't working.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, there's
And
a
then I
lot
snap.
going on. So if we can, and I heard you say the word like anxious, and that very much the like anxiety and fear, they're cousins. So if this anxious feeling that you notice in your racing heart could talk to you and tell you, like we kind of understand why it's coming up, like this, your relationship and your desire for your children's future seems to be at odds. And so this anxiety comes up. If this anxiety could tell you what it was needing, what do you think it might say? It's like, it's not here just to make your life difficult. It's here because it's needing something. And I wonder if you can identify what that might be.
I don't know, maybe just some peace and order, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I'm a very orderly person. Like I have my kids on a very strict sleep schedule and they sleep great. Like, and I'm not very good with out of order.
Right.
And so when things kind of don't go how I hope they go, that disorder, I guess, just kind of flusters me. And again, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of, I feel like I need order. I've gotten better at not needing order, but there's still like, and I don't know if order is the right word, but peace, I guess. I don't know. I've never been like a physical person. And so like, this is new to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I might've also gotten like spanked once in my whole life. So I wasn't like often hit. And so like, I haven't been like big around like physical aggression. And so that's kind of just a new experience for me.
Yeah.
And how to navigate that. So I guess just peace and order.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that makes so much sense. Like based on your experience, you don't have like a relationship to people hitting each other and being really physically aggressive toward each other. And so it makes sense that this stirs up a lot of those feelings because you don't have something to go back on of like, oh yeah, this has happened before. So this is what we do. Your system is like, alert, alert. This is so different. This is unexpected. This is not okay. Mm-hmm. And so it does make so much sense that this particular situation, especially between your two children, is really challenging. And like you said in the beginning, it's a trigger. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a trigger because your system is like, we don't have a plan. And again, you have shared that you actually do have a plan. And we're really just zoning in on these moments when you're at the edge mm-hmm. of being able to stick with your plan. So where to from here? Being able to listen to this anxiety that is yearning and desiring more order doesn't necessarily change how your children are behaving with each other. But I wonder, I wonder if we can bring their behavior into the frame of like what is safe. And so this anxiety that's stirring up in you is telling your body this isn't safe. And we need more order. Order is safe. My boys hitting each other and kicking each other is not order, and so it is not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of match your experience?
Yes.
Okay. So knowing that we can't just jump in and change the boy's behavior, I wonder if we could engage in a short process to help shift your system's perception that this aggressive behavior is so unsafe that you like have to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that we're going to just toss our hands and say, well, they're going to hit each other. Oh, well, they'll just work it out. I'm like, no, we're not taking hands off the wheel, but we are finding a process to bring more safety into your body. So in this situation, so I'm wondering, you mentioned that your heart would start racing and that sometimes you realize, okay, I'm going to try to breathe. That doesn't always work. I wonder if you'd be open to just kind of a more physical, tactile experience. Like, you know, that anxiety, you know, it gets going in your heart. And if you were to just rub your chest and say, oh yeah, I see you. Hey, anxiety. I know why you're here. If you do that with me, I wonder if we can kind of revisit a recent scenario. If you can just imagine the boys are hitting each other. You've talked to them already. You've done all your things. And here they are again. And you hear that voice again, again. We just talked about this. And you feel that racing heart and that anxiety. And you just say, hi, anxiety. I know why you're here. and even tell it, you're safe to be here with me. The boys are still going at each other. This anxiety feeling is with you, and you're just letting it be with you.
And I'm wondering if maybe doing this will help me slow down as well before I go at them. Not go at them, but before I respond.
Yeah, before you dive in.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And can you imagine just this simple little like physical acknowledgement with your soothing hand on your chest and the verbal acknowledgement, hey, anxiety, I see you here and I understand why you're here, that something might kind of downshift in your system?
Yeah, I think so. And I think even maybe saying that out loud in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure my husband will think I'm crazy, but
husbands can think what they're going to think.
but yeah, maybe like, and I've thought about like, just like saying things out loud too, when I was feeling them, that I think would be helpful to just bring, like, I'm aware of that feeling, but to bring more awareness to that feeling, I feel like would help me to release that feeling a little bit more.
Yeah. What the other interesting thing a lot of people maybe just don't realize or forget about emotions is that they're kind of like a one-act play.
Mm-hmm.
There's a beginning, middle, and end. And emotions want to be felt. And so if they're in the middle of their one-act play doing their thing and not getting felt, they're just going to keep hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can feel them and acknowledge them, then they get to the conclusion and move on. And so, yeah, I'll be really curious to see how, if you engage in this process, how it impacts that scenario. And looping back to who your kids are and where they are in their development, this is actually a pretty, I think, substantial connection that this aggression is happening when they're in a heightened emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
You modeling a practice of naming your emotion and being with it and finding safety with it is modeling for them when they are more developed and more capable and have like all of their, you know, pieces in place, that they'll be able to engage with their emotions mm-hmm. in this kind of way.
Yeah. And they actually, even my 21-month-old has started like coming over and saying, Mason hit Caden sad. Like
yeah.
He started to actually say like sad, or that's the only word feeling he knows. But like my 3-year-old will say, oh, I'm really frustrated, or I feel like part of me is like, I'm doing something good, because like if they're able to start expressing like, hey, I'm feeling frustrated because Caden took my toy or knocked over my fork, or I'm sad that I couldn't do that, or I'm disappointed. Like he used the word disappointed. Part of me is like, maybe I'm doing something right and maybe I'm modeling something right. It's just this one scenario that I've always like, that's kind of like made my mind go yeah. elsewhere. Like maybe I'm not doing anything right. So hopefully I can go into these situations a little bit more at peace and a little bit more calm, so that, you know, that kind of floats out of my mind. Like, okay, you know what? I am doing okay. I am doing something right.
Well, yeah. And like we said before, in your experience, this is at your edge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another piece of this practice of being in your feeling of that anxiety and giving yourself more sense of safety with it is going to grow where that edge is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't disappear. That edge just means you're human.
Mm-hmm.
You're human. And so if I can just like summarize everything you just shared, you have so much awareness already. You have already engaged in so much healing and growth. And you see evidence of that in the ways that your very young children are able to verbalize their emotional experience already. And there's this place where you still feel stuck because you keep, like, life, being a parent, it's pushing you to your edge, which is what is going to happen. And so you don't have to change anything else about what's happening, not even what you're doing, because you are doing the right things. And now you have a different tool that can support you when you're at your edge, and in the long run will help you grow where that edge is.
That sounds good. So yeah, hopefully good. Instead okay. of it being like the fourth time when I go off, maybe it'll become the sixth time. And then later exactly. it'll become the eighth time.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe it will be the fourth time and that's it. Anything is possible. Yeah. And again, like you were saying, sometimes when I dive in and I'm going at them, if this process helps lessen the intensity of where you are in those moments, again, that is worth something.
Right.
Doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be. And so if you can just scale it back a little bit, that counts.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because like that makes me feel a little bit calm, like a little bit more at ease too, to remember that, okay, like if I go back and I'm like, okay, it's my third or fourth time and I'm still doing this, to kind of be able to recognize that, you know what, maybe it is less intense and that's progress. So I appreciate you sharing that with me, because now to be more aware of, you know what, this is better.
Yeah, it's not perfect, not ideal, not my right. best, but it's better than it could have been.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Brooke, thank you so much for this conversation today. I think there were some good takeaways, and you and I will be able to connect later and see how it turns out.
Yes, I'll keep you posted. I'm sure I'll have plenty of opportunities over the next few days.
Yeah, like when we're going to sign off, and maybe in the next hour.
Right.
But hopefully not. We'll see. Oh, yes, thank you yes, so much, great. Brooke. And I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. We'll be in touch soon.
Well, thank you so much too.
Okay, so I just know that there are probably a million people listening to this parent coaching session and thinking to themselves, but how do we get these boys to stop pummeling each other? But wait, we just let them do that. I need you to address this, Alan.
Oh, I know, this is hard. Well, and I don't have two boys, but I have two children and they go at it. And so that's a very valid question. And that question really I see is like under the umbrella of, can we just make this hard thing that I see in parenting go away? And while that's a valid question, if that's what you're aiming for, you're most likely going to be disappointed over and over and over again, because parenting includes hard situations.
Yeah. Or you're going to resort to punitive strategies that actually have long-term consequences that far, in my opinion, outweigh the cost of, you know, a 3-year-old and a 21-month-old
yeah.
getting upset with each other and expressing it physically when someone takes the toys. Like 3-year-olds become 5-year-olds. A lot of this behavior ages out. That's not minimizing it. I loved when you asked Brooke, you know, like how are you seeing these children's capacity? Yeah. Why is that an important question?
Oh, yeah, because I think, I'll just speak from my own experience, when children shift out of infancy, they start walking, and then usually soon after they start talking. When children make that developmental shift, I think as adults, our expectations go all the way to the end of like, oh, you're a miniature adult. Fantastic. And like, not consciously, we know that they're still little, they're still young, but so many times we start seeing them in like much further ahead than where they really are. And that can be really hard if we're thinking, Like, I wish my 3-year-old would not hit every time he gets upset. When it actually does make a lot of sense, and when we can understand different developmental stages, we can actually celebrate some of these behaviors. Like, no, it's not, for life, we don't want to go hitting people when we get upset. For a 3-year-old, we can celebrate that they're expressing when their boundary has been crossed, and there is teaching available for, acceptable and healthy and supportive ways to communicate when our boundaries are crossed. So I think what I'm trying to say in a very roundabout way is we can see the behaviors that come instinctively from our children, understand that it makes sense in their developmental stage, and then celebrate where it's coming from and see how, as a parent, we can guide them into a healthy way of expressing where it's coming from. So you broke my clock tower. I'm angry. That's coming from, I want to protect what I've created. Okay, we get to honor that. And as a parent, let me model with you and support you how we honor that without hurting somebody else.
Absolutely, absolutely. The true root of the word discipline is to teach. And teaching requires you, well, you're a former educator. You're the perfect person to have this conversation with. Because effectively teaching our children what to do in those moments has some fundamental building blocks. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, for starters, the parent themselves needs to be in a place, or ideally, they're in a place to be in a teaching mode. And like you were saying at the beginning, if a parent is in a very high stress mode and they just want to shut it all down, they're not going to be teaching. They're just going to be like eliminating the pain that they're feeling. So, first, we want to be able to see if a parent is in a place of, calm, grounded. I see this as a teaching moment. Then what can I do? And I would say a very general kind of teaching pathway that is very reliable is to start with modeling. I'd love to show you what we can do here. And then to do kind of a joint, like guided approach. Let's do it together. You can do it with me. And then eventually over time, you can do this on your own. And it's very non-linear. You might, get to a place where a child is like doing this on their own and shouting, no, stop, instead of hitting. But then there's a day where they're really tired or they're really hungry and they do hit again. It's not always going to be a straight line path to
It's
success.
never a straight line path. It's
Yes.
Yeah, and I think there's beauty in normalizing that. I think part of the reason that we get so frustrated in these moments, right, as Brooke so eloquently shared, is because we've said, don't hit a million times. And that can feel super frustrating for parents. And this is how children's brains develop. Like they go in spurts and then they level out and then they regress and then they go in a spurt and then they get tangled up with other children in the family who are going through their own developmental pathway. And it is chaotic, especially in these early years. I guess as a advocate for children, my hope is that by normalizing that, then there's less labeling, less ascribing meaning, less and less stress for parents, right? Like, this too shall pass. It always gets better, and then it won't. And it's just the journey. It's just the journey.
Yeah, and I remember what really stood out to me from the conversation with Brooke is that everybody has that point where they're doing everything right, quote unquote. They're offering everything they can. They're supporting in every way they can. They're preventing and preparing in every way they can, And still, these situations can arise, and it's not for anything lacking from the parent. It's life, it's complexities of human relationships, sibling relationships. And so when parents still find themselves in these tough moments, that they don't take it so hard on themselves. And I think that is where a lot of parents, well-meaning, because they care so much, start to get hard on themselves because they think that there's something else they should be doing. And to hear someone from the outside view say, "You're doing everything you can." And yeah, it sucks that it is still this hard. I hope just really relieves a lot of pressure that there's not always going to be that like pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That we keep doing as much as we can, and we keep doing as much as we can, and we hopefully can find that place of acceptance in those moments where it's still really hard, even when we've done everything that we could.
I think particularly for parents who are committed to breaking generational patterns of harm and are cycle breakers and are holding themselves to the highest of standards because they want to give their children a different experience of childhood than they had. You know, we want to be the parent for our kids that we wish we had. And that can become really heavy for those of us who, you know, do this work because we had emotional wounding or trauma as children. It's like we've set our own bar so high that we can't possibly meet it, because we would need children to not be children in order to do so. Related.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think offering parents that reminder that, and like in Brooke's story, she was sharing that she has a point where she just can't do it the best way anymore. And so she snaps. And so she does the things that she doesn't want to do. And that in and of itself is not creating the long-term harm that a lot of parents today know they want to prevent. It's those moments, and then the parent just walking away like nothing ever happened, that creates the potential long-term harm. And so for Brooke, seeing that moment, seeing how that was not her ideal, and then coming back and having the conversation afterward, that is what is truly healing and protecting her children from the long-term effects of not knowing, why did mommy yell? They know why. Mommy had a bad day.
I'm a bad kid, instead of mommy had a bad day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, kids will also, all without our sharing what the actual circumstances were, children will always create a narrative that puts themselves at the center of our behavior. Boom. If I have a mic, I drop it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because children cannot, like neurologically, they cannot create a story that diminishes their parents' capacity, because that would mean they couldn't survive.
So okay, you get to drop the mic now. Wait, let's do that again.
A child's brain and system cannot create a story that diminishes their parents' capacity, because that would be a threat to their survival. So when the parent says, "This is on me, I own this, it's a moment that was hard, I'm here now and I'm gonna do better," that's the story that lets the child know, I'm okay here, they're okay here, we're okay here.
I'm just going to leave it at that. Alan, thank you so much. Woo, just blew my brain. I'm going to go let that sink in. I hope our listeners will too.
Thank you for listening to the Parent Coaching Podcast with Kiva Schuler and the coaches of the Jai Institute for Parenting. If you like us, please subscribe, like, and review us. To learn how to become a certified parenting coach, visit Jai at jaiinstituteforparenting.com. J-A-I, Institute for Parenting, all one word, .com, for our free information kit.